Hello there, you're watching Left, Right and Centre on NDTV. I'm Maha Siddiqui. In another shocking case, and eerily similar to the Shraddha Walker murder case, a 32-year-old woman was killed and chopped into pieces by her live-in partner in Mumbai. The decomposing body parts of Saraswati Vaidya were carried out of her home in plastic bags and bed sheets by 56-year-old Manoj Sane. Some gruesome details suggest he even boiled some remains of hers in a pressure cooker. Police were alerted to the gruesome scene by residents of the building who complained of an unpleasant odour wafting from Vaidya's and Sane's apartment. Authorities have since arrested Sane over the horrifying incident. The potential motive for the crime is yet to be disclosed by investigators. But in the recent past, this is at least the fourth such case of brutality of a partner that has shocked the nation. From Shraddha Walker to Nikki Yadav and to Sakshi. What is driving men to such insane levels of cruelty to those they claim to love? That's our discussion this evening. But before we head into the discussion, a look at the updates in this particular case first.
This is Manoj Sane, who is accused of murdering his girlfriend in a Mumbai suburb, chopping her up into many pieces and even cooking them to erase evidence. Police are now finding it difficult to identify the body parts. The shocking incident took place in an apartment in Mira Road, where 56-year-old Manoj and his 32-year-old girlfriend Saraswati Vaidya were living together. They were renting the flat for last 3 years, but neighbors say they never spoke to them. Sumesh Shivastav, who lives right opposite that flat, told NDTV the place had been stinking for the past 2 to 3 days. Sumesh knocked on Manoj's door, but no one answered. Sumesh recalls there was a sound of spraying in the house one time. Soon, the police were informed. Officers opened the door of the flat to a heartbreaking scene.
फिर और अंदर बेडरूम में गए जो ट्री कटर मशीन रखी थी और
इलेक्ट्रिक से जो चलती है
हां इलेक्ट्रिक से चलती है और बेड पे ब्लैक कलर का प्लास्टिक पड़ा था तो हमें लगा शायद उसके नीचे बॉडी है तो उसमें कट कर कुछ नहीं था ना कोई ब्लड ना कुछ किचन में सब कुछ था जो भी था तीन बाल्टियां भर के रखी थी जिसमें ब्लड और मसल सब सड़ गए थे कुछ पता नहीं था कि क्या बॉडी है क्या है
अनदर नेबर आल्सो रिपोर्टेड फाउल स्मेल अकॉर्डिंग टू हिम मनोज एंड सरस्वती नेवर टॉक्ड टू एनीवन
हाँ आई थी सर मॉर्निंग में कल
अच्छा
हाँ नॉर्मल रूटीन के अंडर जैसे कि हम लोग उठते हैं उठने के बाद नॉर्मल अपना पानी आने का टाइम हो जाता है मॉर्निंग में तो पानी भरते हैं पानी भी अब भरने के लिए जैसे हम भरने के बाद हमने कपड़े वॉश के लिए वॉशिंग मशीन के लिए ये बाथरूम है इसका गेट खोला तो उसमें से वियर्ड स्मेल आई
हाँ नया नगर पुलिस हैव अरेस्टेड मनोज कोर्ट हैज रिमांडेड हिम टू देयर कस्टडी टिल जून 16th Police say Manoj has confessed to fights between the two.
Nayanagar police station ke prediction mein Geeta Kaizukar ki society hai wahan pe 7th floor 7th manzil se ek flat hai wahan se badbu aane ka information local police ko mila tha police station ke officers aur staff ne jaake wahan pe dekha to kitchen mein bahut sare utensil aur bucket mein wahan pe chop kiye hue body parts mile unka identification ho chuka hai अक्यूज्ड को भी अरेस्ट किया गया जो डेड बॉडी के पीसेस मिले वो एनालिसिस के लिए हमने जेजू हॉस्पिटल में भेज दिया है
अकॉर्डिंग टू द पुलिस दे फाउंड द पीसेस ऑफ वुमन्स बॉडी इन अ कटर मशीन एंड 3 buckets फ्रॉम द फ्लैट द बॉडी पार्ट्स वर ऑल्सो कुक्ड इन अ प्रेशर कुकर द रिमेन्स हैव बीन सेंट टू द जेजे हॉस्पिटल अकॉर्डिंग टू द पुलिस सम पार्ट्स ऑफ द बॉडी हैव बीन डिस्पोज्ड ऑफ The accused and the victim met 10 years ago at a ration shop in Borivali where Manoj used to work. Saraswati was an orphan and Manoj moved out of his family home to live with her. When the NDTV team reached Manoj's old house in Borivali, his uncle said there was very little contact with Manoj.
Abhi kya 10 saal pehle wo chhod ke gaya baad mein kabhi खाली रेशन के दुकान पर मिलता था वो हम हाथ करके चला जाता था
व्यवहार कैसा था मनोज साने का आप लोगों
को हमारे साथ तो अच्छा था
पर ऐसा किया होगा या नहीं बतौर चाचा आपको क्या लगता है उस पे मैं आपको आप आप चाचा हैं उसके, तो मैं इसलिए समझना चाह रही हूँ कि आपके लिए खबर कितना अचंभित करने वाला, और आपको लग रहा है क्या कि आपके भतीजे ने ऐसा किया होगा?
वो ऐसा कैसा मैं बता सकता हूँ।
This brutal murder has eerie similarities with that of Shraddha Walkar, who was also killed last year, her body chopped up by her live-in partner, raising questions once again about women's safety and unchecked partner violence turning into murder. Bureau Report, NDTV.
Meanwhile, unfortunately, there's been an overall rise in violence against intimate partners. Several reports link excessive consumption of porn to violent behavior. India is the third largest consumer of adult content, though legally it is banned. Some, despite being trapped in toxic relationships and at the receiving end of domestic violence, continue to suffer in silence due to social stigma. My colleague Nayantara Singh analyzes some of these reasons.
A 32-year-old woman killed and chopped into over 20 pieces in Mumbai. Not by a stranger, but her own live-in partner. In just the latest episode of violence against women by men close to them. From the gruesome murder of Shraddha Walkar by her longtime partner, to Nikki Yadav being killed and stuffed into a suitcase by her boyfriend. From a 16-year-old girl being stabbed to death in a busy lane in Delhi by her alleged lover, to now, this latest incident in Mumbai. These murders have one thing in common. They were all committed by their partners in the heat of anger, a fight, or plain old jealousy. But while crimes against women have haunted us since the beginning of time, the authorities say that increasingly, most of them are committed by men known, and worse, trusted by the victims.
When we are talking about crime against women, we are always harping on the statistics. But when we analyze, we observe that around more than 95% of the crime against women is perpetrated by people known to the women.
But despite women being more empowered than ever before, why is it that men, and especially young men, think that they own their women? And why are their crimes against women getting more and more gruesome? Psychologists believe that social media has a larger role to play than we think.
We have a very easy access to SIM card, we have access to how much GB you have and what kind of and pornography is available, right? Even if it is banned, it is available. Watch pornography, you look at women as objects, you want to just that time have immediate gratification. You are not putting your cognitive ability to think of long-term consequences.
While watching pornography is banned in India, making it difficult to ascertain where our nation currently stands in terms of porn consumption in the world, a 2017 report by a leading pornography platform showed that India was the third largest consumer of adult videos in the world. But how can you tell if you are in danger? Activists believe that warning signs are hard to watch out for, especially if a woman thinks that she is in a safe space.
The minute it is a problem with someone you love, you care for, you think you understand, you know their background, their history, then it is, you know, human nature to start thinking that maybe this person has a chance of, you know, getting better. And usually abusive partners, you know, they will abuse and then the next day they will be, you know, very upset and they will promise to behave better and all of that.
For Mandeep Kaur, who died by suicide in the US last year after suffering years of domestic violence at the hands of her husband, societal pressure trumped any warning sign.
जैसे कि मंदीप को यही सोचती मर गई कि लोग क्या कहेंगे, लोग क्या कहेंगे अगर मैं कुछ भी डिवोर्स वगैरह करती हूँ, लोग मेरे पे उंगलियां उठाएंगे, मेरी इज्जत खराब होगी. अपनी इज्जत बचाते बचाते और अपने बच्चों के बारे में सोचते सोचते उसने सुसाइड कर लिया.
Every little girl is told to watch out for strange men. But no girl is ever told to be scared of her own husband or lover, people that she expects will be a safe space. But it's in these very spaces that she finds herself most vulnerable. But is the onus really on society? Society that tells its women that men will be men and that men will be violent. And therefore, the crisis in masculinity remains unresolved. With camera person Sanjay Kaushik and Pooja Arya, this is Nayantara Singh for NDTV.
Let me now go across to our guests who are joining us on this very crucial discussion today. Dr. Ranjana Kumari, women's rights activist, writer and academic director for Center for Social Research. Kunika Sadanand, actor and lawyer. Meghna Pant, author and domestic violence survivor. Dr. Nimish Desai, former director, Institute of Human Behavior and Allied Sciences. Khushbu Sundar, actor and BJP leader. Shashi Kant, former DGP Punjab, as well as Vikram Singh, former DGP Uttar Pradesh. Let's break down this discussion into two parts. First, the ordeal of the women, and then we'll come down to what's driving men to commit such gruesome crimes. Meghna, I want to come first to you. As a domestic violence survivor yourself, I want to ask you, how long did it take you the courage to speak out or even understand that you don't need to suffer in silence?
You know, the one thing I'll say is that I suffered domestic violence for over 5 years despite my education. I have a double master's. I was living abroad. I was financially independent. And I always tell people that there's no perfect prototype for a victim or a perfect prototype for a perpetrator. So you can be educated, you can be modern, you can be independent financially as well. But that will not save you from domestic violence. You can live in a penthouse in Malabar Hill or live in a chawl in the Dharavi slums, and that will not save you from domestic violence. The only way to save yourself from violence is A, to recognize what abuse looks like. It sounds very laughable, but despite all the awareness today, women still refuse to acknowledge that they are being abused. They don't understand that abuse can take many forms. It can be physical, emotional, financial, and many other forms. So women are not taught to even speak up. And I think we can only stop the violence once we stop the silence. Also, the natal family, as first responders, it's a responsibility to help women get out of the situation, because where do women go? They don't have shelters. Who do they turn to? They must understand that the law does protect them, both the civil law as well as the criminal law. And there are many avenues nowadays to speak up, but they have to first gather. The only person who can help you in situations of domestic violence is first you yourself. So stand up for yourself, show up for yourself, and understand that, you know, in the name of love, we must not annihilate ourselves completely, because that's not love at all.
Absolutely. Ranjana Kumari, but sometimes, isn't it too late before women realize that this form of domestic violence can turn into something fatal?
Well, certainly, because A, they lack the support system. Even the natal family keeps convincing them of going back, adjusting. It'll be all right if you adjust. That's one of the messages they start getting from the very childhood, that, you know, you have to adjust, you have to give in, and relationships are give and take, and giving is has to be from your side, number one. Number two also is that, you know, they just have to go through all this. And it's easy to say that you stand up for yourself. I'm sure that we have seen hundreds and thousands of victims who are, you know, reporting to us and to Women's Commission, to 400,000 cases, over 400,000 cases annually get reported to National Crime Records Bureau of the harassment by husband and the relatives. But, you know, these women, first of all, they know that they will not be supported. Secondly, they know that they don't know where all they need to go to. If they go to the court, there is nothing. If lawyer, you know, 101 different kinds of cases that they will suggest and entangle you into all kinds of legal hassle. Then also, you know, police station, they first thing they will do is to mistrust you. First thing they will, in any, all these four cases, even if, and then a support system, where are the neighbors? Where are the own family? Where are the in-laws? You know, it's just not to, you know, and also these days there is a certain kind of thinking going on where we are deflecting the issue by saying it's all love jihad, is something to do with some communal issue, some kind of a, you know, community which is doing it, instead of recognizing that all these women, it's a femicide. Is women are getting killed because they are women. They are getting killed because they don't have the support system. They are getting killed because they just have no place to go to. And justice is not getting, even Shraddha Walkar case, what is happening to the case? Have we heard anything after that kind of a brutality which has shook the whole nation? Do we know where the case is? So it is what the whole system is. On the one side, the system is failing the women. On the other side, the society and the family is failing the women. And all the responsibility is put on her. whether it is physical violence, emotional, you know, the law was drafted by so many of us taking everything into consideration that it's not just physical violence, it is emotional violence, it's financial violence, everything. But then if the law is not getting effectively implemented, what do you do?
Absolutely. And as was pointed out by Meghna, also recognizing the fact that this is abuse, that is the first step. A woman sometimes is unable to understand that because she's constantly asked to compromise, as has been pointed out. Nimish Desai, I want to ask you, how hard is it for anybody, and a woman specifically, to understand that she is trapped in a toxic relationship? As we clearly saw in Shraddha Walkar's murder case as well, that there were instances that very clearly gave out the fact that she had been trapped in this toxic relationship for some time, but it was just very hard for her to step out of it.
Maji, having dealt with victims of domestic violence, having dealt with in legal context the perpetrators, and having dealt with many of the court issues, and having worked with NGOs like Ranadis, I want to say this in continuation of what three of you have been discussing. First, a small correction, if you don't mind, of what you were saying last. It is not the difficulty in acceptance that the lady concerned has in most cases. As Meghna said, I think the person understands, and obviously, at least physical abuse or strong emotional abuse, every person would understand. What contributes to the delay is the societal, familial factors, the pressures, and what the young lady unfortunately has internalized of the old value system that the family and the parents brought. So my point is that there is not so much of an issue of increasing awareness as of helping all women get genuine empowerment about personhood. That any one of us, and that young lady or that middle-aged lady, also is a person with all the rights, and she need not tolerate abuse, at least of moderate to severe kind, interpersonal issues apart.
Okay.
Even for a few weeks, one may not take the extreme step of separation. I really think that when we talk about women's empowerment and emancipation, this is one part that's still lagging behind. And it's lagging behind because we are obviously going through a flux. We are a very highly transitional society. So while in many aspects, including psychological aspects and including empowerment between genders, while there are some strong points, this issue of continue, Karna.
Okay.
You know, somehow one
All
must
right.
make it.
All
See,
right.
one
no,
locus
I'll
is
just,
the parents.
I'll just interrupt you, Nimish Desai, because we seem to be having trouble with your link there. Let me go across to Mr. Shashi Kant. Sir, as a police officer, what has been your experience with such cases? Is the social pressure that is being talked about, a stigma, a driving factor in women not being able to speak up? And is it equally true for both women in the urban areas? Because here what is most shocking is that most of these women belong to a strata or a class which one would imagine is educated and in some sense empowered women.
Yeah, you talked about my experience. It has been simply horrendous. I've seen this kind of incidents which I had to deal with them, taking the help of various NGOs, other organizations, and then we tried to send up and dispatch our lady police officers. They should go to various places and talk to the women about, because I always believe that there are telltale signs when such a thing happens. But in one word, experience has been horrendous. There are so many explanations. People might say that, well, talking of data 2016 to 21, the figures have been released only last month. There were about 22.8 lakh such cases, 30% covered about domestic abuse by husbands and their relatives. And the persons like me, they also jump onto the things that, hey, the proportion of the police in population is not good. It's only about 100-odd% for 1 lakh. But those excuses, I call them excuses. What we need to do is that we need to contact, as police officers, Thana and charges, we need to talk to the local NGOs, and we need to send our lady police officers to go and talk to various localities and to tell people, particularly women, that, well, these are the telltale signs, don't take it lightly. Mm-hmm. And because what happens, like one of the speakers has said, that even the families are not prepared to accept it. Mm-hmm. So yes, they have to be told about it. I don't know about empowerment, is empowering or not, but I know that it's a crime and it has to be curtailed with the active help of the women who are suffering out there. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
And it perhaps constitutes the first step in saving a life, maybe. The domestic violence, as we've seen, can take any turn. It can pressure a woman, as we've seen in the one case in our report, to commit death by suicide. In another case, it can be fatal because the partner himself is taking the extreme step of killing the person. Kunika Sadanand, there was a mention made during this discussion on how legal remedies should be sought, but how difficult are these cases to take up legally? Many fear that walking out of a relationship, the woman could in fact end up being stalked by the partner, being troubled, or their family is being troubled, or she being maligned by their former partner. It's a very complex situation, and it's not very easy to seek legal remedy, is it?
So, you know, as Ranjana ji said and Meghna spoke earlier, Meghna said you have to recognize it. Yes, recognizing is one step. Then after that, what Ranjana ji said, that the support system is the second step. And the third step is, if you have to take legal recourse, what is happening in the courts, we all know. I mean, the woman goes, first she has to file a complaint, the police station. How friendly is it over there? What is the atmosphere there? What is she going to contend with? Then again, when it goes into the courts, how many dates, how much running around? And then most important, financial stability. Does she have the resources? Because how many people will do a pro bono case for women like this, you know? Okay. So the system is definitely not conducive to empower women. We want to empower women. We are working on empowering women, but education is not empowerment. And we do not know how to teach the men to handle empowered women. Now, for example, a man, if there is a woman who's empowered, and will that man have the capacity in his personality? Has he been taught that he has to accept this and this is how it has to work? You have to work together. You cannot, you know, and then also we normalize so many things. We have an aggressive narrative coming from the political leaders trickling down to the society end, to the end of the society. Yeah. And we normalize behavior, normalize calling women names. We normalize social media abuse and the trolling. We just normalize it and laugh it off. And so we have become an aggressive society. And at the same time, men have not been, taught to, you know, come to that level where the empowerment of women is happening, or at least where we think it's happening. I don't think we are really empowering women just by educating them. So these are so many things. It's a lot of juxtapositions that have to fall into place.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if we have a posh act, okay? I just want to give a small example. We have a posh act where if a woman is abused in the workplace or, you know, sexually harassed, she can go, but it's a long drawn process. And if she does file a complaint, and if she does do a settlement, then again, she has to go and withdraw those complaints, run around, go to the police station, because the system has still to be well oiled. Then there are no, you know, even when there is domestic violence, there are supposed to be self-help centers, one-stop center that's supposed to be there. You tell me in Maharashtra, how many one-stop centers are working? There are, even in Mumbai, we don't have a one-stop center. If you go to the data, which is on their website, we don't have one-stop centers, which is supposed to be from the Nirbhaya time, we were supposed to have this. So the one-stop center, not only for rape victims, it's also for women who have to run from somewhere where they're being abused. Where is the safe space for them? So many things are to be put into place. Unfortunately, we're just fighting over Hindu-Muslim, about nonsense that's going on. It's very sad.
So the systems need to be strengthened, and the first responders need to be family. Those are the two important points that have come through. Khushbu, I want to bring you in here. How important are the first responders? In this case, we've identified it as being family support in such cases. For instance, in Saraswati Vaidya's case, unfortunately, she did not have parents. In Shraddha Valkar's case, she was not in touch with the family. Does that work to the detriment of the woman involved in this case?
Yes, definitely. A woman definitely needs a support. She doesn't need your physical support, she doesn't need your financial support, but what she needs is very, very emotional support. Because if a woman is in trouble, she can't reach out to her loved ones. She can't reach out to her kith and kin. She can't reach out to her friends. She can't reach out to her parents if she has. I mean, that's when she starts realizing. And when she is subjected to this kind of a violence, she starts thinking that she's good for nothing. Because, and this is what the men actually tell the woman, you have nobody to go to. Where will you go? You do not have any support system. You cannot go to the society, because we unfortunately have built this kind of a society. We have built the society where we become absolutely judgmental, where even a rape victim is asked the first question, what did you do to entice the man to rape you? You know, that kind of a society we live in. So a woman is first thing you work, these kind of perpetrators, the murderers or the culprits, they first work on their minds and saying that you do not have, and they go through this violence, any kind of physical violence, abuse, sexual abuse, or, you know, domestic violence. They are subjected to this because it has been put in their minds by their partners that you have no one to support or nobody to fall back upon. And this is what starts working on them, and they start accepting their fate that I have nobody. My family is not accepting me. My loved ones do not understand, and I have nowhere to go. So I have to tolerate this kind of violence. And I think this is where we really need to speak to the families and their loved ones and say that at any given point when a girl is getting married and going, stop telling her that kuch bhi ho jaye, compromise karke adjust kar lena. We need to stop telling that to the girl first. The first lesson we need to give a girl, that the first time a man raises his hand in that relationship, it means you have to put an end to it. Because he does not stop with one slap. It will continue. The first time he keep quiet, it encourages him, saying that it's fine, I will continue to abuse because she does not respond to me. And I think this is what we need to tell our girls of today, that you need the support and we will give you the support. And they need, I've been listening to all the other esteemed panelists here, and what they rightly say is that they do not know where to go. We have a laws, but then we are still living in laws which were made by the Britishers and colonial laws. Though we have a constitutional law written by Ambedkar, we still live like we have moved forward. But this was way back 76 years ago. How are we going to move forward? We have POCSO, but then what about the women with the domestic violence? What about the women who are subjected to this kind of violence? I mean, you just keep going through it. And even in, you know, very sadly, when you look into Shraddha's case also, the first thing that comes to is, are that girl to kya baal chote karwaye the, she was in a living relationship with this man. So it's okay. She is the one who was to be blamed. I mean, you don't blame the victim. You need to question the person who has subjected to this kind of gruesome violence. And,
all right.
You know, that is where we need to start.
So blaming the
victim.
Sorry, go ahead, Kunal.
I'm going to say something that's really going to create a controversy here. I was seeing the package just before this, your last show that happened. I'm sorry to say, I have all my, you know, sympathy with Mr. Shraddha Walkar's father. But he said, I've spoken to Mr. Amit, I've written to Mr. Amit Shah to change the law about living in relationships. Okay, living in relationships. So now look at that mindset. Here, I would say, it's not about the living relationships. You have to tell the child and teach the child and empower them with how they have to recognize the red flags. Here again, we are judging. We are again judging that living in relationship is bad, and the girl goes and lives there, and she goes and gets into trouble. Sorry, you go and live in with somebody,
The two points that I want to take forward, both of you have made that, blaming the victim. And the other point that was made by Khushbu is about emotional manipulation. Now, in such cases, it is very hard for the woman, Vikram Singh, I want to come to you now, to seek support from the family. That's when a woman is looking out for the system to support her. We seem, and I think most of the women on the panel do believe, that the systems do not support the women.
It is very understandable. And of course, the worst kind of human tragedy is that the woman is absolutely singled out for all the persecution. Laws, they're as good as they are implemented. We have wonderful laws, but they're shoddily implemented. The support system, the family chooses to keep away and maintain a distance and cajoles, convinces, bullies the daughter to go in for a rapprochement and a settlement. No questions, even if she is brutalized to death. Three, the police. Being in the police for 36 years and seeing it from very close quarters, proactive arrangements to identify and deal with the problem, they are just non-existent. My esteemed colleague, Mr. Shashikanji, is here and he bear me out. It cuts across all the states. The basic malady is the king can do no wrong. The fault lies only with the lady. And therefore, the police department almost functions like a boys' club. If he's the husband, I'll tell you because no translation can do justice to the original. Pati hai, naam pati hai. Agar do thappad maar bhi diya, to uska haq hai. Which era are we living in and what kind of wild justice is this? Ki pati hai, thappad maar sakta hai. Sorry, it is not a boys' club. We are governed by rule of law. And the Domestic Violence Act categorically and the IPC says it is a punishable offense and the husband should be dealt with or the male partner should have been dealt with very, very firmly. Hmm. Proactive steps of the community policing experiments, non-existent. Hmm. Of course, there are good NGOs, but they do not even represent 0.5% of all the NGOs that work. We don't have Vandana Kumaris in every district. A single Vandana Kumari ji, where can she go and how far can she extend a helping hand and wipe the tears? We need in every district. And of course, the police will have to rework, reorient themselves. We need more police officers, help centers, single window solutions. But yes, we have miles to go before we sleep.
Absolutely. Meghna, what are some of the warning signs, the red flags that women should watch out for? Now, in a case of domestic violence, it's physical in nature. Obviously, the woman will understand she's being hurt physically. But sometimes emotional manipulation or abuse is very hard to understand. What are some of the warning signs that women should watch out for?
I think first of all, please understand that no perpetrator will come with a placard saying that I abuse women, I hate women, I'm a perpetrator. So understand, you know, a man can be very sophisticated, he can be highly educated, he can be charming, especially in the public sphere. And none of those are signs that he is going to be an abuser. So first of all, recognize, like I said earlier also, there's no perfect prototype for a perpetrator. And if a woman, you know, if a man is jealous, if he's vindictive, if he's petty, if he's trying to control the woman, if he's trying constantly manipulating her, if he's lying to her, he's stonewalling her during arguments. You know, one benchmark of love that I always tell people to notice is how do you deal with fights? How do you deal with issues? And that's a big indicator of what your life going forward with that person will be. So recognize that and always treat yourself. You know, women are always taught to be subservient for the institution of marriage, for the sake of love, for the gender that is more powerful. And I say, turn that narrative around in your head and say, I will not be subservient. I will not be subjugated. I will stand up for myself. And if I'm feeling instinctively, because we women are very instinctive creatures, if you're feeling like there's something wrong in the relationship, let no one else interfere, especially the perpetrator, because he will isolate you. He will make you believe he's the only one who loves you, that you are not worthy of even being loved. He'll strip you of all your dignity. He'll strip you of your self-worth. That's what also happened to me. I became suicidal because of what I was going through. Someone like me, who was a very happy person, a very accomplished and highly educated, but I lost all faith in myself, because that's what a perpetrator will do to you. So he'll tell you, you have no recourse but me, because I'm the only person who truly loves you. So don't buy into all these, you know, lies. Recognize abuse for what it is and remove yourself from the situation. Like someone had just pointed out, you know, with the first slap itself, please understand it's going to get worse and worse for you. And the man will come to you the next day. He will cry. He'll be very nice to you for days after. And once he wins you over and, you know, sort of traps you back into the relationship, stops you from leaving him, you will feel like you are the perpetrator and he's the victim. So there are a lot of mind games also involved. So please be smart. Again, show up for yourself every day and don't be afraid of the tag of divorce, the stigma. It still has a little bite to it, but I feel like it doesn't have the kind of taboo it had earlier. People are doing divorce parties nowadays. They're celebrating being single. It's not such a big taboo anymore to be divorced. And the way I have rebuilt my life, if someone like me can do it, I'm married to a wonderful man now. I have two beautiful girls. If I can do it, so can you. So don't think you're alone in this world. We're all there for you. And just, you know, stand up for yourself. Show up for yourself. Trust me, it's better to be divorced than to be dead.
All right. So we've spoken about the women in this case. Let's talk about the men now, who are the perpetrators here. Mr. Shashikant, would you continue to categorize these crimes as crimes of passion? Because on the face of it, there's so much planning post the murder, and it seems to be also coldly executed.
Yeah. As my senior colleague, Mr. Vikram Singh, has also said, look, these are not crimes of passion. These are crimes which have been calculated. They have been planned in a cold-blooded manner, and that's what it is. And one thing I'd like to say, because there are lots of studies on psychology and all those things, I've read that, they say that women have a better sixth sense than men. I think ladies have to rely more upon their sixth sense that, hey, man, this is going to happen. This is a sign. This is a warning sign, because if we try to enumerate the warning signs, there, I think there'll be thousands of it. So I think the ladies have to depend basically on the sixth sense, which is certainly much, much, much better than any other man that the studies really prove it. And now again, I say that these are not the crimes of passion. They are cold blood. They are the crimes which have been calculated and they have been planned with absolutely remorse and everything. And they need to be dealt with accordingly. It's not a crime of passion. No, I don't believe it.
That's a very important word that you've used, remorse, because in many of these cases, we've barely seen that. Dr. Nimish Desai, how is that remorse completely removed from the perpetrator? I mean, they have ended up in such a gruesome crime against a person they claimed to have loved. How does not having remorse work here?
There are two broad categories to the immediate question, and then a few other points. I've been saying since last year for all these three or four cases that from what we all see, what's available to us, as a professional, I would have no doubt in my mind that these perpetrators are carrying moderate to strong hallmarks of psychopathic personality trait, is lack of remorse and inability to learn. Lack of respect for social norms. So that scientifically is not surprising, although to an average citizenry, it's very shocking. The second part is that sometimes it may be that the person is not fully psychopathic, but he's carrying psychopathic traits, proclivities, that come through at a certain moment for a person who he was in love with. So this, like I agree with both the police gentlemen who have said, this cannot remotely be considered as crimes of passion. These are, as a norm, in these four cases and otherwise wherever in the world over we have seen and studied, these are calculated, premeditated crimes, not just at the before and at the time of action, but even after that. Okay. If I might, and I'm sorry, I was disconnected. If I might take a couple of minutes to summarize what I have understood and what I think you all are saying. Surely, like Meghna and Ranganji have been saying, the largest battle, the biggest, the toughest battle is going on in the mind of the victim. The love that one had, the social obligation of the marriage that she still carries, the uncertainty, the hope, and a whole lot of other things. So the biggest battle is going on there. Now, without necessarily disturbing that too much, at a familial, social level, by the group work of NGOs, which Ranaji does some, there needs to be that awareness of not drawing a line, basically. Drawing a line is the one phrase that occurs to me. And so the point is that there will have to be that genuine empowerment of women about physical abuse or emotional abuse.
Absolutely.
And, I'll
interrupt you, sir, because we have moved on to the other aspect, that of the what's going on in the perpetrator's mind. Vikram Singh, as Mr. Shashikant has said, as Dr. Nimish Desai has said, these are cold-blooded, premeditated murders. Is that why we see these brutal and gruesome manner of destroying evidence as well?
Words of profound wisdom from Mr. Shashikant and Dr. Desai, sir. Indeed, I would say that crime, hedonism, and violence seem to be inbuilt in the DNA. My words may be harsh, but I'm speaking from experience, because in the police, any seasoned investigator would find and he would say, I don't like your face. Not because of the looks. The looks may be that of film star material, but inside, he's nothing but a monster, a demon, and a Frankenstein. And if that be the case, then I think that It is much more to it than what meets the eye, his upbringing, the parental grooming, and what his sense of norms, what is right and what is wrong. And perhaps the society did not intervene when the first sign of brutality was displayed by the person, whether it was arrogance, financial and emotional blackmail, or plain and simple brutality. Everything, when all rolled into one, do you think for a moment, I would pose the question to the esteemed members, is it possible for you even to slap your pet? What to talk of slapping a human being? What to talk of slapping a person whom you presume, whom you have said, and you have crying horse that you love to your death, and then to brutalize, chop to pieces, and cook in the pressure cooker and feed it to the dogs? You really have to have your mind wide in a very different direction. And that is where the investigation begins, that you have to see what is happening behind the eyeballs of such a pervert. And then it is possible for professional investigators like Dr. Desai, Mr. Shashi Kanji, to find out how much of he is a human being and how much of he is a monster. And then the rule of law should be supreme, unsparing, so that not 2%, but at least 98% should go behind the bars, and their last rites should be performed behind the bars, not outside.
Kunika Sadananda, you know, we've spoken about the family, we've spoken about the system, all in some sense failing women at the moment. What about the society? I mean, you know, these men are interacting with others in the society. In this particular case, the perpetrator was living in an apartment. Neighbors said they never spoke to him. Now, what is the responsibility of the society as well to be able to identify such men?
You know, I'd like to say here that we are a society where at least 50% or more, if you pick up anybody from the road and you analyze them, they would be suffering with bipolar disorder. They would be having some kind of personality issues or some kind of mental traumas which they are dealing with. And that is also for men, not only women, men and women. Now, the problem here is also about the awareness of mental health. When we start feeling strange, when we start getting, or we see people who are getting very, very violent, or substance abuse, or what, we don't recognize it as something which has to be looked into. We just say, oh, aaj to usne bahut zyada pee li. Yaar, ye to har dusre din sharab pee leta hai. Har dusre din jhagda karta hai. Haan, ye na kabhi kabhi raat ko late aata hai. He comes late, we don't know where he goes. You don't check on people like this because you think, nahi, it's normal, theek hai, aadmi hai. A lot of men are suffering mentally, but they don't accept it because accepting that you have some mental issues is also a stigma. And then that goes, if it goes, it falls on victims like your wife, your children, your sister, people who are considered weaker in society or who've been brought up to consider themselves weaker. So this is also an issue which we need to look at. So, and the reason that men are doing this, as I said before, because they're not being able to handle the surrounding, the aggressiveness that is in the atmosphere, the women who are getting more aggressive, I don't say that they should not. They've been suffering for many years, and if they're now finding their voice, but we have not trained our men to handle these voices. But we have not trained.
Right. Kunika, I want to quickly go across to Ranjana Kumari because we've completely run out of time here. Ranjana Kumari, how important then is counseling in this scenario? And since I'm pointing out again that many of these cases are coming in from urban India, where we would imagine that the woman is more empowered than one in rural India.
Well, you know, that's what I was going to say when people are quoting data that, you know, if 10 happens, one gets reported about women. Perhaps if 100 happens, one gets reported. And that's not an exaggeration coming from our personal experience. But, you know, what is very important here to understand that why do we condone violence? Why do we really say first slap is okay? No, it's not okay. Women of this country know that it is not okay. It is, who has given right to men to slap a woman? You know, ask this question. Hold the hand. Tell the person that next time I'm not going to be here in this house. I don't want to live with such an abusive man. You know, that courage, because I know that once you have the courage, you will be facing a lot of other social onslaught on yourself. But no, say no. There is, and also general narrative has to change. You know, we have had leaders in our society who looked at the kind of problem that women were facing, and they led movements, social movements to change that. Today, there is not worth a person important leader of this country who ever opens his mouth about what's going on with the women in the country. You know, whether it is wrestlers sitting in a heat of 43, 44 degrees or whether this woman getting cut to small pieces, they don't think. They only what matters to them is women's vote. But women's safety, women's respect, women's dignity doesn't matter to them at all.
And
so why? Why?
Yes, absolutely. And the onus, Ranjana Kumari, as you're also trying to point out, clearly in this case lies with the men. Khushbu, a last speaker now, I want you to sum up as to what you believe should be done to teach the men to handle a relationship properly. So much is told to a woman when she's in a relationship, how she should tackle it. How should the men be taught these lessons?
I think the first thing we need to teach the men to respect women. We are talking about equality. We are talking about gender equality. But here the men, they have their egos and they think because they're physically strong, it's their birthright to abuse a woman and to keep her under control. You know, the kind of society we live in, we also see a lot of men who are trying to be a little nicer than you. They have their friends, they have their family, and they're like, "Arey kya yaar, biwi ki baat sunta hai." You need to know how to control the woman. You need to know, you have to have a control over your woman. You know, those attitudes need to change. And I would like to give a message very clearly across, because me as a mother of two grown-up, 23 and 22, 20-year-old girls, the message has to be very clear that I am not going to accept any kind of abuse, whether it is verbal, whether it is physical, or it is about my respectability and dignity. The first sign where a man wants to put you down in front of his friends, saying that, "Arey, you are stupid, tumko kya aata, you know nothing." I think this is where we need to step up and say, "Stop. You cannot do this to me." And this is what I tell my girls, and this is what I would like to tell the girls across the globe, across our country especially, where they say love is blind. Love cannot be blind. You need to open your eyes and see and understand what true love is about. All because right. any true love will not abuse you, will Absolutely. Not suppress you, will not harm you or hurt you.
Absolutely.
And they have to understand that this kind of relationship, you need to put a full stop to it. Your dignity, your self-respect, and your own, you cannot allow anything to harm you,
Absolutely.
Physically or mentally.
We'll leave it at that. All those points encapsulated by all the panelists here on this discussion very ably this evening. Many thanks for joining us on the show. We're taking a very quick break now. We'll be back with more news. Stay with us.